Chapter 19, A New Kind of King, Richard the Lionhearted. Many knights and noblemen of England went off to fight in the Crusades, and so did one of England's most famous kings, Richard the First. For his courage in battle, Richard became known as Richard the Lionhearted. Richard was tall, golden-haired, strong, and broad-shouldered. He looked exactly like a king. But Richard the Lionhearted spent very little of his reign being a king. When he was still a prince, he heard that Jerusalem had been recaptured by Saladin, and from that moment on, Richard's only desire was to go and fight in the Crusades. 2 years later, Richard's father died, and Richard was crowned King of England. As soon as he became king, he started to sell off his possessions so that he could raise an army to take on a crusade. He declared, "I would sell London itself if only I could find the man to buy it." And as soon as he had enough money, Richard left England and stayed away for years and years. Almost everyone was angry, one medieval historian tells us, that the king would leave his own kingdom with so much speed as though he didn't care anything about it. When Richard arrived in the Holy Land, he joined forces with the King of France and the Duke of Austria. But soon he quarreled with the King of France, who decided that it would be easier to go back to France than to keep on dealing with Richard. And then Richard announced that the Duke of Austria shouldn't be flying his banner right next to Richard's. After all, Richard was a king, and the Duke was just a duke. When the Duke refused to move his banner, Richard told his men to go steal the banner and throw it in the mud. At this, the Duke took his soldiers and went home. Richard had lost all of his allies. Richard marched on towards Jerusalem with his English crusaders, but Saladin's army came out to meet him and kept him from ever reaching the city. Once Richard fought his way into sight of Jerusalem, but although his armies gazed at it longingly, Richard himself would not turn his gaze toward it. "I will not even look," he announced, "at the walls of the city which God himself will not allow me to deliver." Meanwhile, Richard started hearing rumors from home. His younger brother John was trying to steal his throne. So Richard started back to England to protect his crown. He decided to take a shortcut across Austria and ran into none other than the Duke of Austria. The Duke hadn't forgotten Richard's insults, so he took Richard and shut him up in a tall prison tower. No one knew where Richard was. All of England mourned over his death, except, of course, for John. And Richard himself lay on a heap of dirty straw, staring through his tiny barred window at the blue of the sky. But one person did not believe that Richard was dead. According to legend, Richard's faithful friend Blondel crisscrossed Europe on foot, peering into every dungeon and pausing outside every fortress. He would sing an English song and pause to see whether anyone answered. But usually French or German or Italian faces would peer over the battlements, not understanding the English words. Blondel made his way down the winding green shores of the Danube, pausing and singing at each castle. It was almost dark one night when he halted at one tall, grim tower, wondering whether the inhabitants might give him a bed for the night. He sat down at the base of the tower, leaning his back against the cool stone. And as he pondered, he idly hummed the first lines of an old, old tune, Greensleeves. As his voice trailed off into the silence, he heard the second line, hummed waveringly, from far above him. Blondel leapt to his feet. He sang the third line, and a voice sang out the fourth line in English. He looked up and saw Richard's blonde head, dirty and matted, his beard grown long and ragged in the window far above. Blondel went back to England and announced, "Richard is alive!" Most of England rejoiced to hear it. They sent ambassadors to the Duke of Austria, begging him to release Richard. The Duke agreed to set Richard free in exchange for 150,000 marks. This was a huge amount of money, almost $3 million in today's money. John suggested that it would be easier just to leave Richard in jail, but the people of England disagreed. They paid the ransom, and Richard returned home to England. But he didn't stay long. Soon he was off again, this time to fight the King of France over French cities which Richard claimed belonged to him. And fighting over a tiny French castle, Richard was killed by a stray arrow. He had survived Saladin's fierce armies, only to fall in a meaningless battle close to home. Now his brother John would finally inherit the throne of England. John Lackland and the Magna Carta. Richard's nickname was the Lionhearted, but John's nickname wasn't nearly as pretty. John's people called him John Lackland. Why? John was the youngest son of the King of England. Remember, England was a feudal system. The king owned all of the land that he ruled. So when John's father died, Richard inherited the whole land of England. John didn't inherit any of it. He lacked land. But when Richard died, John became the king. Now he wasn't John Lackland. He was the king and owner of all England. John's older brother Richard had always treated him like a little boy who couldn't possibly rule a country. While Richard was away at war, John tried his best to claim the throne. But when Richard came home and took the throne back, he laughed at his brother. "What a child you are," Richard said, and ordered the cook to fix John his favorite supper to cheer him up. And John was 27 years old. So when John became king, he was determined to show that he was a strong, grown-up ruler. But he had all sorts of troubles. For one thing, he wasn't tall and golden-haired like Richard. He was short, plump, and losing his hair. The noblemen of England didn't respect him, and the King of France was trying to take away the castles that England owned over in France. John knew that if he could defeat the French king, he could prove that he was a great warrior like his older brother. So he fought battle after battle in France. These battles cost money. He had to pay his soldiers, feed them, and buy horses for them. So to raise money, John came up with ideas to get more money from his noblemen. He declared that in emergencies, like wars with France, his noblemen owed him extra money. He announced that whenever a nobleman died and left his land to his son, the son would have to pay extra money to the king, an inheritance tax. And furthermore, if the son was still a child, John could take control of the nobleman's land and make money from it. Now, all of these were ways that kings had raised extra money before John came to the throne. But John used them to raise lots of money. Soon his noblemen started to feel poor. John became more and more unpopular. And then John did something that was even more tyrannical. He ordered his nephew, the only other possible heir to the English throne, murdered. Finally, the noblemen revolted. They gathered together into an army, marched into London, England's capital city, and captured it. We call this a civil war, when soldiers are fighting in their own country against their own people. John realized that he wouldn't be able to recapture London, so he dressed himself in his royal robes, gathered his court together, and went out to meet the rebels at a field called Runnymede. At Runnymede, the nobleman presented John with a paper and told him to sign it. The paper described new laws that the king had to follow. According to these laws, the king could only take extra money from his nobleman if the payment was fair, and if he got the nobleman's permission to ask for it. The laws also said that the king couldn't throw his nobleman in jail unless they had actually committed a crime. This paper was called the Magna Carta, or Great Charter. John didn't want to sign this paper. After all, he was the most powerful man in England. He could do whatever he wanted, as long as his soldiers were strong enough to force the people to obey him. He didn't have to follow the law. He was the king, so he was the law. Whatever he said had to be done. But he knew that unless he signed the Magna Carta, he would lose his crown. So he signed. Now the King of England had to obey the law like everyone else in his kingdom. This was a new idea. For the first time, the law was the most powerful force in a country instead of the king. Today we still follow the ideas of the Magna Carta. If you live in Canada or in the United States, your leaders don't own your country. Instead, they have to follow the law like everyone else. The president or the prime minister can't suddenly decide, "Today I want everyone in my country to pay me $50 so that I can start a war." They have to ask the people's permission to raise taxes and start wars. But instead of traveling to Washington, D.C., where the President of the United States lives, or to Ottawa, Ontario, where the Prime Minister of Canada has his office, and giving them permission ourselves, we choose representatives, people who go to Washington or Ottawa and speak to our leaders for us. If the President or Prime Minister wants to start a war or raise taxes, these representatives have to give permission. In the United States, these elected people are called representatives and senators. They meet together in Congress. In Canada, these representatives are elected to the House of Commons. They are called members of Parliament. This system got started 800 years ago when John signed the Magna Carta. Robin Hood. When John was ruling England, before the Magna Carta was signed, the people of England were poor and miserable. When John took money from his noblemen took money from their peasants and serfs, and there was no one to help them resist this tyranny, except for Robin Hood. The people of England told stories about a mysterious man who lived in the royal forests with a band of outlaws. He wore a green jacket and a green hood so that he would blend in with the forest. When King John's noblemen took money from the people of England unjustly, this outlaw stole the money and gave it back to the poor. He was loyal to King Richard, not to King John, and he hoped that Richard would return soon from the Crusades. In some tales, this mysterious outlaw was called Robin of Locksley. He was said to be a nobleman whose lands had been seized by King John. But in other tales, he is simply called Robin Hood. Here is one of the tales of Robin Hood. Robin Hood and the Butcher. Long ago, in the days when Richard the Lionhearted was away fighting in the Crusades, his younger brother John ruled over England. Now John was a greedy man, and he appointed other greedy men to run the villages of his country. The worst of all his men was the Sheriff of Nottingham, who stole from his people and gave money to King John. The people of Nottingham could barely survive on the scraps and pennies left to them by the sheriff and his men, and although they lived on the edge of a forest filled with fat deer, plentiful enough to feed the whole village through the cold winter, they were forbidden to kill a single buck. For the forest belonged to King John, and although he never walked in it, he threatened to hang any man who shot one of his deer. One day, Robin Hood was out walking with his companion Little John. Little John was a stout man who could fight even the strongest warrior with nothing but his quarterstaff and come out the victor. The two friends were strolling through the deep forest along the road that led to Nottingham when they heard the clop of horses' hooves. So Robin and Little John stepped off the road and hid behind a tree. As they watched, a butcher's cart came into sight, loaded with fresh meat. "Aha," said Robin to Little John, "this man is headed for the house of the sheriff. No one else buys such rich food. Let's step out and have a word with him." So Robin and Little John came out from behind their tree. As soon as the butcher saw them, he wheeled his cart around, for he knew, as did everyone, that outlaws haunted the forest. But Little John seized the horse's bridle, and Robin said, "Good butcher, I'll change clothes and places with you for 10 pieces of gold. Let me take your cart into town while you rest here in the forest with my men." The butcher didn't want to rest in the forest, but Little John was holding his horse's bridle with one hand and a thick quarterstaff with the other. So he climbed down, quaking with fright, and gave his clothes to Robin Hood. Robin Hood fixed a black patch over one eye to conceal his face, climbed onto the cart and drove into Nottingham, to the house of the sheriff. When he arrived there, he gave the sheriff's wife such a good price on his tenderest, choicest pieces that she invited him to stay for dinner. So Robin the outlaw tied his horse to the sheriff's fence and went in to eat with the sheriff. He sat at the table, chuckling to himself as the sheriff complained about that pestilential nuisance Robin Hood. But he pricked up his ears when he heard the sheriff say, "And worst of all, this fellow Blondel, who once knew Richard, insists that Richard is not dead at all, and that our gracious King John is no more than a usurper." "Indeed," Robin said politely. "Does he think Richard will return?" "He swears he'll find him," the sheriff said, taking a good swig of ale. "He has gone to wander through the world looking for Richard. If he should find Richard, our days of ease will be over. But maybe he'll die of plague first. More meat?" "I thank you," Robin Hood said. "No, I must be getting back to my herds and flocks." "By Our Lady," the sheriff swore, "if your herds are as fine and fat as these, I would buy them myself." "I'll sell them to you," Robin said. "Ride on my cart with me, and I'll give you as good a price on the whole lot as I gave you on this day's meat. But be sure to bring all your money with you." Now the sheriff was too greedy to resist such an offer, so he filled a bag with gold and went with Robin at once. The two drove the butcher's cart deep into the thick forest of Nottingham, and the farther they went, the more uneasy the sheriff became. "Butcher," he whispered, "where are your herds?" "Close by," Robin promised him. "Well, that fellow Robin Hood might be near," muttered the sheriff. "Robin Hood is no worry to me," Robin answered with truth. "But we need go no further. Just let me call my herdsman." And with that he put his horn to his lips and blew three clear notes. At once a huge herd of fat deer poured across the road in front of him. And just after came a crowd of men in green, with bows on their backs and quarterstaffs in their hands. At the sight of them, the sheriff turned white and began to shake with fear. "These are my men," said Robin, pulling off his eye patch, "and those deer are my herds. They roam the forest, protected by John's unjust laws, while the people of Nottingham starve. But you've brought them money to buy meat. Hand over your bags, Sir Sheriff." The sheriff, his hands trembling with dread, handed over his money. Little John spread his cloak on the road and poured out a river of gold onto it, while Robin's men shouted their approval. "Take him to the edge of the forest, blindfold him, and leave him there," Robin ordered. "Let him go back and tell John that the people of Nottingham serve King Richard, not the cruel prince who starves and beggars them. Long live Richard, King of England!" "Long live Richard, King of England!" all the men cheered. But the sheriff snarled, "One day I'll hang you, Robin Hood, and all your men too." "But first," Robin said, "you'll have to learn the difference between a butcher and an outlaw."